Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. Greetings to you wherever you may be. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined, as always, by Corey Chatelain.
You know, just, you know, I did a lot of bashing of the Landon Donovan retirement lately, but I just, you know, I want to say I'm sorry because I was swelled, you know, my heart swelled with joy when I saw the ultimate shout out by Chivas USA in solidarity of Landon Donovan's retirement when they, as a club, retired themselves. So here's to you, Chivas USA.
You can't spell folding without LD.
That is correct.
Yeah, that is true.
I did see that in a dictionary once. I agree.
So welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, folks. We are happy to have you. And as always, I should probably mention, because we're always getting new listeners and old listeners as well, so thank you for your support as we wade through the international soccer waters. And let me tell you that, of course, the Two Daft Yanks Podcast is available on any kind of platform to where you could get it on your mobile device of your choice, your phone, your tablet. So check out Stitcher. Check out iTunes, of course, if you are an Apple person. We may have to have a conversation about why you like Apple, but if you're an Apple person, we still serve your needs. And So there you go. So please, and as of course, always check out 2daftyanks.com, your one-stop shop for all things that are daft. And silence from Corey.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of daft, we have been labeled as daft, and we label ourselves as daft. But if you remember last week's podcast, we told you that this Balotelli and Liverpool situation, the bottom was about to drop out. And sure enough, a few days later, it pretty much has. You got those asinine remarks from Brendan Rodgers.
He's not a team player comments?
He's not a team player. Oh, he sulks. Oh, he doesn't do enough when he's not scoring goals. Well, yeah.
I seem to recall somebody that we know saying pretty much the exact same things. Oh yeah, it was us. So yeah, it's, you know,
true.
Past events are the best predictors of future behavior. So, you know, I don't know why people don't understand that more.
So you even have the reports coming today out of the English media to where Liverpool have opened up talks with Italian clubs to sell Balotelli this January.
Yeah, which at this point, I'm not sure, because, you know, he's already been at Milan, he's already been at Inter, so I guess now who are the clubs? I mean, I imagine he would have to try out Juve and Roma and those guys next.
It was like mid-table clubs that they had mentioned. I want to say one was Catania.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know, because Milan's probably wouldn't be able to afford him anyway, because they got, you know, they're still dealing with money issues.
Very true. Excuse me, I'm eating on air. I shouldn't do this.
No, it's...
So, please talk while I finish this cracker.
Yeah, no, see, I like this. We're now getting to the same levels as some of those podcasts that actually get paid to do what they do. And yeah, we're actually, you know, really unprofessional on air, so this is good.
Their wives are in the background doing dishes. They got kids running around screaming.
Yeah, or, you know, analysis is littered with sexual jokes every other sentence, which I'm not against. I'm just saying, you know. I want to make 60 grand doing that too is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. All right, but the main highlight of this football week for me, Corey, was the first El Clasico of this 14-15 season.
Yeah, I actually watched two.
Yes, I think a lot of people watched. In fact, so many people watched, especially on the BN streaming site. You know, they stream their stuff for the subscribers. It's a pretty good service. I've used it a time or two. But shocker, it crashed during the game, and it wasn't able to – I don't know if they were able to get it back up, but it did crash during the game.
You know, see, I actually
watched it. Who saw that coming?
Yeah. Yeah, all those nutsos overseas crashed a service. Again, that's one reason why I don't miss the streaming stuff, although I did watch most of this weekend on streaming,
but,
ironically.
But this wasn't a pirated feed. This was their official feed.
Yeah.
But yeah, then the pirated streams as well, because, you know, they were streaming the legit stream. So there you go.
Well, even the and this will be a tangent just real quick, but even the NBC's stream, when I was watching the Arsenal-Sunderland game around the 60th minute, all of a sudden, you know, not hitting any buttons, all of a sudden it switched me to the Liverpool Hull match, which I was already watching on TV as well.
Oh, they wanted you to see that.
Yeah, well, I was afraid to check my phone. I was afraid it was going to come on there too.
Yeah, well, and you just mentioned it. Do remember, folks, that Balotelli also missed another sitter.
Yes.
That would have been a game-winning goal. It was like literally the last touch of the game, where he was like, what, 3 yards out from goal, maybe two?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Now, granted, I think he was under some pressure, but, you know, he's a big, strong lad. He's supposedly a world-class striker. All he has to do is make contact in that position, and somehow he missed.
Missed
the contact.
So let's get back to El Clasico, which I thought it wasn't your typical El Clasico. I mean, there wasn't the, you know, the diving. There was some dives, but the, you know, the rolling around on the ground and the time wasting was pretty minimal.
Yeah, I think some of that tension from the match is gone a little, mainly because both Guardiola and Mourinho are gone, and I think, you know, a lot of the tension of those matches were the personal rivalry between them, although, you know, who doesn't Mourinho have a rivalry with, really? But yeah, so I think some of that tension and some of that extra hate, shall we say, has dissipated a little in the last couple years.
That is a very astute point you make. And, of course, the final score was Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 1. And Barcelona hasn't given up a goal in league play to this point. So they gave up 3 when they actually had to play somebody.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of missing sitters, somehow Messi, even making contact, missed a sitter from about 6 yards out where he, you know, somehow contrived to knock it wide from basically the middle of the box.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, Real definitely was playing on the counter and very efficiently as well.
Yeah, because, what, Barcelona was arguably in control at that point, and, you know, Messi makes it, Messi with that sitter miss, if he makes it 2-0 there, you know, arguably it's a different match, and, you know, Madrid may struggle to get into it, especially, you know, not having Bale to help those counterattacks, but, you know, Messi did miss the sitter. Next thing you know, Madrid scores the equalizer, about 10 minutes later. And pretty much from there, they were, you know, they were definitely in the ascendancy and in control for the rest of the match, more or less.
Yes, and they got off to a great start, of course, with a pretty good goal and finish by Neymar. But if memory serves me correct, was it the second Real Madrid goal was a penalty? Or was it the first one?
Yeah, it was the equalizer that was.
It was
penalty.
The first one. Okay, so let's talk about that. I don't know. It's kind of. I don't know. I mean, I saw the replay, but I mean, and when a guy's falling down, is there really a natural position for your arms? Isn't the natural position for your arms when you're falling down is to brace yourself? So I don't know. You don't see that situation too often. So what is your opinion on the penalty call?
I don't know. It's It was one of those tough ones in the sense that, you know, if it happens against you, you're probably begging for it. If it happens for you, you know, you're probably begging for it. If it happens against you, you're probably arguing, you know, just as hard that it's not a penalty. With those two teams, you know, I do think it was the kind of call that, you know, like we're always talking about, if it's a mid-table club, you know, like Granada or somebody like that, or Sevilla, I doubt they get that call. But being that it was one of the, you know, the two big clubs, you know, I think that's why
at
the ref
home
gave
as well.
It. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, at home. So I won't answer it definitively other than, you know, to me, that's the kind of call it was, that it was a big club type of penalty kick. You know, it's the kind of penalty kick that isn't awarded if you're a smaller or a mid-table club.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a pretty good match, and I had another point I was going to make, but of course I forget. I do remember one thing to where I don't know if it was Phil Shane who was saying this or Hudson, but somebody mentioned that they thought that the Madrid attack looked better without Bale. And I haven't watched them a lot this year, but, you know, with the space that they were getting and the efficiency they were operating on the counterattack, I don't see how Bale would have made them any worse.
Well, I think they were going on the point that Isco, however you say his name?
Isco, yes.
Has been playing really well so far this season for him, and he's kind of in that, I don't want to say new breed of striker, but... but that breed of striker that is doing really well at the moment, meaning that, you know, the type of striker, kind of like a Suarez and a Sanchez for Arsenal, Mueller for Bayern, you know, Lewandowski, those kind of guys, those kind of guys that do a lot of work both on and off the ball, and that they're constantly moving, and, you know, they're also not afraid to track back and play a little defense and win the ball high up the pitch as well. Because I do remember that they were raving about him being, you know, unsung type of player and arguably one of the best players in La Liga so far. So I think that was the point, it was kind of playing off of that point, you know, that he was playing and, you know, not Bale.
Yeah. And, you know, he's such a talent where he'd literally be starting on a regular basis for any club in the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But he just happens to play for Real Madrid where, you know, he's mainly on the bench unless there's injuries. So, there you go.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like you said, playing at a club like Madrid, you're not going to be a full-time starter because, you know, clubs like Madrid and Barcelona, they have to play the names, you know, because they're... you know, their reach worldwide is so big, you have to play those names. So until you establish yourself as one of those names, like you said, you usually got to wait for injuries or suspension kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, with that El Clasico talk over, we would like to bring you our El Clasico highlight of the week with our very good friend of the show, not Ray Hudson.
Well, actually, it wasn't not Ray Hudson, but...
Oh, it wasn't not Ray Hudson? Okay, sorry. I thought it was not Ray Hudson was coming on.
No, he is out. Unfortunately, he is outside, and I will let him in a minute. But I did want to say that the most... I did tune in to El Clasico mainly because I knew at some point there would be just really ecstatic Ray Hudson simile metaphor... garbling of the English language, and the best simile he had all match, and you said you don't recall this, but it was after, I believe it was Pepe who scored the game winner on a header.
Yes.
And after about the third or fourth time on the replay, the simile he used was, look at Pepe, open space. He peeled away from his defender. He peeled away cleanly, like tissue off a off a paper tissue off a toilet roll. And that's like,
who thinks of this?
Exactly. It's like, while that is an accurate simile, why would you invoke anything that has to do with the bathroom? I have no clue, other than you're Ray Hudson and you're just, you know, you're out there.
Unhinged.
Yes. So that's why I could, you know, I couldn't even invite not Ray Hudson in, because not even not Ray Hudson could top actual Ray Hudson on that one.
Okay. Well, there we go. So El Clasico, the first of what could be a few, who knows what the, you know, you'd expect them to possibly meet in the King's Cup, which I like to call it, and maybe even in the Champions League.
The King's Cup? You mean the horse race?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Copa del Rey.
Yeah, yeah, no. Just making a bad joke for the one other person that listens to us that probably follows horse racing.
That pulls horse racing. That's probably zero people.
Yeah.
That's like a really old man sport, even though, as you know, I enjoy horse racing as well. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that was El Clasico. So I know a lot of people watched. And sadly, you know, I do have BN here in Denver, like I did in Florida at the very end. So I do need to watch more La Liga because, you know, as I said, I was impressed by the entertainment value, not from a competitive standpoint, but just from even the bottom level teams have a pretty high technical ability to where the football is easy on the eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's arguably the most technical league on the planet.
Mm-hmm, and I would agree with that. All right, let's hop on over on Sunday. The big match up of that day was Manchester United hosting Chelsea, which ended up in a 1-1 dramatic draw to where Manchester United with Robin van Persie, as some Arsenal fans like to call him, got the equalizer where, you know, the ball was just bouncing around off a – it wasn't off a corner, but it was off a free kick that was kind of at like a corner angle after kind of a controversial – I mean, it was a clear foul, but I don't know if it was a yellow card and a second yellow card for Ivanovic of Chelsea.
Yeah, because the first yellow card he got was a also, I mean, they didn't make a big deal about it, but to me it was controversial because he made a perfectly good shoulder barge of Angel Di Maria off the ball in the corner, and because Di Maria weighs all of about 119 pounds, he went flying. Of course, at Old Trafford, Ivanovic gets the yellow card when, like I said, arguably it was a perfectly good shoulder barge.
So, yeah, there is that too. So he got two, you know, which you could argue were two dubious yellow cards, which led to his dismissal. And I don't know, in a situation like that to where – you know, it was literally like a minute left in the game in stoppage time, and they're down a man. Is being down a man in that situation something that a club like Chelsea should be able to deal with to see out a victory?
Yes. Because, like you said, there's a minute left. You know, Mourinho prides himself on having tight, compact teams, you know, well-drilled in defense and positioning and space and all that other stuff. So, you know, from an analysis point, I would say yes, they should be able to deal with it. And from a completely hater fan standpoint, you know, anything where Mourinho's frowning at the end of the match, I'm all for anyway. So,
yes, and we will get to more of that here in a second. But I don't know. Now, you said you didn't watch the match because you were, you know, your exploits on Saturday night allowed you not to do so.
Yeah, no, I watched about a half an hour, and then I unfortunately fell back into sleep because, yeah, my head was throbbing from the hangover from the previous night.
Yeah, so now before the match, they had in the pregame, and I was up and watching, NBC Sports did this, you know, big tribute to the Arsenal Invincibles, and then compared the Invincibles to this year's Chelsea club, and they were talking about the chances of Chelsea being able to do such a thing, going through the Premier League season unbeaten. And, you know, we're what? At the point, that was only 8 games in. What, we're 9 games in now? Is that a... Is such... Should a comparison such as that be being made right now by anybody?
No, because as we stated on a podcast a few weeks ago, you can't even make definitive judgments about the table until the 10th game. So we're not even at the 10th game to where you can even, you know, start making, at least in our opinion, or and especially my opinion, you know, that I wouldn't even want to bet, you know, who would win right now, other than, you know, that I do think it's going to be Chelsea. But, you know, in terms of that, those kind of stuff, there's so many things that can happen over the course of a season. And especially, again, as we've talked previously on the podcast about the holiday fixture period, you know, where you're playing 4 matches in 9-10 days, not to mention the FA Cup round that's around that time to where you're actually playing 5 matches in about 13 days, that, you know, there's just so many things that can happen around that time of year, and especially later in the year when players start getting more fatigued and tired and you start picking up more injuries, you know, unless you're Arsenal and you just get injured all year long, you know, that there's just so many things that can happen that, yeah, it is kind of fairly ridiculous to start making those comparisons this early. However, as you know, one of the things we're always saying, you know, networks have to make storylines. They have to make these themes. They have to make these plot lines so people will watch, or not that they won't watch, but you know what I mean. So that they, the banter thing. So they create banter so people, you know, come visit their website to vent their frustration or to, you know, the yell their support kind of thing. But you know, in reality, yeah, it is way too early to start making those kind of comparisons.
Okay, well, I will tell you that according to their chart, now, you know, they select their stats to fit their means, but Chelsea statistically compares more favorable than Arsenal did at that point in the season as they did today. So there you go. So Chelsea's running the table. Go to the fucking bookie and put your money down.
Right, but more favorable meaning what? They have more points from the...
They have more points, more goals scored, less goals allowed, stuff like that.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, considering the, you know, the other 104 champions didn't go undefeated, you know, whatever.
So there you go. And that leaves us no other conversation to where, you know, hey... I don't know. I forget how many draws Arsenal had in that season, but they had
12.
A fair share of them. 12? Yeah, so I don't know. If you want to be a true, true hater, you could say, well, you know, they just played for a bunch of draws.
Yep, and we got a gold trophy for it. So.
There you go. Well, that's true. And in the end, that's all you could be really judged on. In that season, anyway. So, all right, now let's get back to this. Now, this, I find this very interesting. So, and when we were doing our pre-podcast notes, you mentioned how perturbed Mourinho was at the end of the match.
Yeah, there was a great GIF floating around on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, I didn't see it. What did it look like?
Well, it's just, you know, it's a shot behind him watching Van Persie take the free kick, and when it goes in, he slowly turns around, and he just got this really kind of, you know, the look on his face looked like he had about 20, you know, he had just sucked on 20 lemons and just shaking his head, and you knew he was pissed off, which of course makes me happy, so.
Okay, so this is going to make my next point even more hilarious to you. Now, they get him on in his post-game comments, right? And they ask him, oh, was that a disappointing loss for you, Jose? And you know what he says?
No, but I'm sure it was something snarky.
No, it was, no, I'm not disappointed. I thought we played very well today. And I'm like, dude, we all saw you at the end of the match. There's no way you're happy with how that ended. No yeah. way.
Yeah, well, the comment I liked was the... you know, do you think the decision at the end was a good one to call to make the foul and the red card? And of course, he says something to the effect of, "Well, I don't want to talk about it," and then he spends the next 3 or 4 minutes talking about all the decisions that went against him in the match.
True, that is funny.
Yeah.
Now, that's typical Mourinho.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like me. I don't want to talk about the problems I have at work, but guess what? I'm going to do it anyway, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, now this gets me back. Now, I don't know if he has the right mentality, because, again, by him, you know, most managers in that situation, you would say, they would come out and say, you know what, we should do better in that situation. And, again, I thought he mismanaged his side at the end of last year, and I thought it was him and the way he was speaking that set the mentality of his club that cost Chelsea the title. So I don't know if I think Chelsea will win the title, because I think he's gone soft, because he should be berating his team for giving up such a goal in that situation. But instead he says, no, I'm not disappointed. I thought we played very well.
Well, and again, that's where I would argue I think he did. It's just the public face is something different. Even though, you know, in the past he has done both. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he would have, maybe berated is a little strong, but I'm pretty sure he would give him, you know, a little bit of the hairdryer treatment after that match, despite, you know, maybe trying to put on a better face. Because, again, I mean, we all know Mourinho's, you know, pretty much the most Machiavellian manager around, and he's basically going to try and use every benefit that he can, and he's, you know, has the reputation of being a master manipulator of the press. So, you know, I think that was the case to where, like I said, it was he says one thing, but behind closed doors, he was probably, you know, ripping him a new one pretty good.
Okay, so then I guess my question for you is, and as I said, I don't know, then what is his angle? Why would he say that he's happy? What does he have to gain by saying that to the press? Speculate for me.
Well, because the press, following that specialist and failure comment, there is a portion of the press that, you know, they were all once in his back pocket, but now there is a portion of the press that is starting to become a little more critical of him and is starting to kind of call him out, you know, for being kind of a vindictive little man that he is. So, again, him, you know, where I will give him credit is, like I said, being Machiavellian, he is pretty astute to what's going on in all angles of his, you know, of his, the club he manages and, you know, how the press perceives him. So I do think he is astute enough to notice that some of the press has turned against them, so that, you know, maybe there is a little bit of, you know, catch more flies with honey kind of thing going on with him a little more now.
Now, interesting. Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, now I will say I'm not sure if it's going to be effective or not, because, you know, whether some people are going to be able to see that as sincere or not is another question, you know.
Well, the English press will lap it up no matter what.
Yeah, we're just saying that, you know, sometimes when you're not used to doing something, you know, it's sometimes easy to see that you're a phony.
Ooh, them fight words, son.
Yeah.
Man. Holy moly.
So, you know, if Wenger wants to push him again, I'm all for it. So
yeah, push him. Push him hard.
Or Sam, you know? I mean, shit, I might jump on the Allardyce bandwagon.
Well, that'd be more of a sumo match.
Well,
or a one-sided sumo match.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Allardyce could just pick him up, you know, like Andre the Giant, and just throw him across the ring or something.
Yeah. Awesome. So that gets us into the talk of here of West Ham 2, Manchester City 1.
Sam Malona! Break them up!
Yeah, Sam Malona. So West Ham scoring some goals on City, making them look kind of silly. And there were bubbles blowing all around Upton Park.
Yeah, scoring goals and, once again, you know, looking like a proper football side. I may have to recant on my joke a few weeks ago about when Wenger retires, Allardyce for Arsenal, because if he's going to play some ball, I might actually want him. You know, it's crazy. We're in such weird territory now, you know. Arsenal doesn't play football anymore. West Ham is playing football. You know, he's got proper strikers in there. Mamadou Sakho is apparently one of the buys of the league so far, scoring goals left and right. Making people go, Andy Carroll who? Which, you know, they should have been doing in the first place, but
yeah.
You know, I mean, when he comes back, you know, are they going to turn around and sell him to somebody else or something now? You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. We're in, like I said, it's just uncharted territory.
No, it is crazy. And now we both, you know, in our EPL preview, we both predicted, because of the public comments by his chairman, that he would be on the way out, because we didn't think he would change his style of football, but he has. And I was listening to English radio today, and they were talking about this same subject. So, and they were asking West Ham fans to call in with their opinions. And one guy called in, and he made a very good point. And this will lead us into a good conversation here, of to where, you know, obviously Allardyce can set up his team in a very defensive fashion. That's what he's known for. He's successful at that. And what this West Ham fan pointed out was that against really Allardyce's wishes, or not maybe not against, but it wasn't his idea, is what this guy claims, is that they brought in Teddy Sheringham, you know, the prolific striker, mm-hmm. as a coach to kind of, you know, coach up the strikers and to aid Allardyce in his offensive tactics, as well as they brought, and I forgive me, I didn't get the guy's name, but they brought someone into their backroom staff who's known for, you know, identifying, you know, young striking talent, who may have brought in that Sakho. It sounded like he did. That was the guy who recommended him to West Ham, this new guy that they brought into their backroom, who I don't know if he's a scout or whatever he is. And so they're saying that the board understood that Allardyce knew how to set up defensively, but then they gave him the pieces to advise him how to play more offensive football, and somehow, to date, they're melding that all together and getting results.
Yeah, some of that I don't know if I would believe it, because despite Allardyce being a really defensive tactical coach in the past, he was one of the first coaches to really embrace the, you know, the influx of all the newer statistics that you know, sites like WhoScored.com use now, which was always one of the curious things about him, is that he would, you know, he would apparently do all this statistical analysis, and then he would plug in these certain type of players into a really defensive system. Now, again, you know, there's all sorts of philosophical and tactical discussions that you could get into there, where, you know, if you're able to teach offensive guys defensive method, then maybe you have enough to, you know, nick goal or you know, nick games 1-0, 2-1, just because you're solid, and then have enough scoring or, you know, enough technical ability that you might nick the extra goal or whatever. So I don't know if I would believe that, you know, wholesale, because, yeah, that's, I mean, again, that's the kind of thing you can't really prove unless you're, you know, unless you're in the club and in the staff, or, you know, Allardyce or one of those guys comes out and gives comments, you know, saying such. But, yeah, because that's kind of where I was going to give Allardyce a lot of credit, is that if this change is down to him, that's where you do have to give him credit, is that he was, you know, willing enough to change his tactical style to implement, you know, the more offensive changes, and, you know, to his credit, it's working for him. And, you know, sometimes that's the kind of like Roberto Martinez, or, you know, gets talked about, or why people held him in such high regard, is that, you know, even though his teams didn't do well and he was at lower clubs, they were always competitive. So, you know, there's guys like that and Allardyce, there's always kind of the mindset of, well, you know, if you give them enough talent, maybe they will be able to win stuff because, you know, they're able to make their teams competitive with very little. Because that is something I will say about Allardyce, is that he's always been the kind of coach that, you know, has gotten the most out of, you know, out of the players he has. So,
yeah, so it's very interesting to see. And we'll have to see if he can continue the what they've set up so far. You know, it's still early, of course, and it could all fall apart, but it looks like they're going to be a tough matchup for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and I mean, if, you know, we got Southampton and West Ham currently in Champions League spots, which is crazy, but I mean, I'll say this here right now that, you know, if Arsenal has to fall out of the Champions League for the first time in almost two decades, I'm not going to begrudge it if it's somebody like Southampton and or West Ham, you know?
Really? Okay, I'm going to remember this.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not, you know, you fuckers or Man U or you know, Liverpool or one of those guys, you know, I don't mind, you know, losing out to somebody like Southampton or West Ham every 18 years.
Every 18, okay. Once out of every 10, that's okay.
Yeah, you know, it's like Swallows from Capistrano or the Cicadas or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, now let's just get into a quick conversation here about drop points and how fans and the media. So obviously City dropped some points. You could say Chelsea dropped some points in games that, you know, most people thought they were going to win. And there's other examples. There's been ton because, you know, the EPL, as we mentioned, it may not be the most technical league, but it's the most entertaining and the most competitive top to bottom because of the type of talent it attracts. So what point do you want to make about people's viewpoints towards drop points?
Well, not just so much the drop points per se, just the drop points in the sense that they lead to results that people want to make these really big, definitive, season-long type of judgments on a particular result when, you know, sometimes these results are in a vacuum or sometimes they are a singular data point in a run of form that only lasts, you know, three or four matches or maybe even, you know, only two matches, and that you know, especially in modern football, sometimes you get these bizarro results, you know, like the City Man U match, you know, the 6-1 from a couple of years ago when, you know, Man United wins the title the next year, but everybody was talking about how that one result was going to be the demise of Man United at the time, and you know, City was going to waltz into a new era of a dynasty where they were going to, you know, win the Premier League for the next 3 or 4 years, et cetera, when, you know, like I said, sometimes it just means that, you know, with all the talent that everybody has, sometimes those results don't necessarily mean the definitive things that some people think they mean. I hope that made sense.
No, that does make sense. And that kind of dovetails into my point on this when you told me this is what you wanted to talk about, is that, you know, it's a very different viewpoint in soccer compared to other sports, especially American sports. I'll say that just because, you know, we're American-based and most of our listeners are American, and they understand the American leagues. But when you get over into European soccer, when a team that is perceived to be better loses, they get very harshly judged, whereas here in the United States, when an underdog wins, you hear more praise for the underdog instead of, you know, bashing of the favorite team.
Well, yeah, that I think that gets into the cultural thing of the whole, you know, republic versus, you know, former kingdom thing, to where, you know, there's still kind of this latent idea of royalty and all this stuff, but
I got you. So I guess my point to finish this off would be is, you know, football is more than just a physical or a technical game. And it's the mental game that sometimes separates two sides. Because, you know, you have to be able to, you know, have that mental toughness in that right situation to be able to do what you need to do in order to put yourself in a good position to win. So, and I think that has a lot to do more in soccer than any other sport because, you know, there's really not a whole lot of set plays you can do except off the set pieces, you know. And even then, those are hard to execute. So it's all about your instinct and your mental awareness and your mental toughness. And that can overcome a lot of times, you know, a team's physical or technical advantage because it just takes, you know, that one lapse of judgment can score a goal for a team, and that could be enough to win a match.
Well, yeah, and it's also one of the only team sports that doesn't have timeouts or commercial breaks either. So that's what leads to a lot of that mental fatigue is that you don't really have established breaks to where even the stoppages, you're still technically playing, ergo you still have to concentrate. So that's why I think a lot of times you see, especially late in matches where you see these mental breakdowns is that guys just kind of zone out because they're literally mentally fatigued. But like I said, to me, it's just the thing that kind of makes me chuckle sometimes is that a team drops a result to a team, like you said, that is perceived that they should beat, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like like we joke around about the North London crisis thing sometimes is that you have a string of a couple of bad results and all of a sudden, you know, we're going to slip into a relegation battle or something when, you know, sometimes it's just a couple of results that are part of a much larger data set that at the end of the season don't really mean much other than, you know, somebody's got to lose and most champions are only going to win maybe two-thirds of the matches, which means there's a third of the matches that they either lose or draw. So a lot of those matches are going to be against clubs that, you know, are perceived to be lesser than them. Like I said, to me, that's just what's funny is that because of the short-termism of people nowadays, they just want to, oh, well, so-and-so lost 3-0. Well, they're obviously done for the season when, no, you know, they just had a bad day and, you know, played like crap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they are crap.
Well said. All right, well, now let's wrap up the show with some of our typical two Daft Yanks daftness.
Yeah.
So I'll let you lead off. I know you have a good one that I didn't hear about, which I find absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, and I now granted I didn't look long, but I couldn't find any video or any GIFs or anything, which I'm sure they would have been great. But, yeah, so just a short one that the mascot for Torquay United, which, you know, Torquay United is a small club, lower divisions of England. I want to say League One, perhaps. Yeah, it's either League One or League Two, which is third or fourth division. But yeah, you know, perennial lower division club. But yeah, so apparently there was some incident. Their mascot allegedly threw a punch at a fan. And, of course, his buddies didn't like it, and all of a sudden there was a mini fracas, or fracas, as the English would say. So apparently the Torquay...
Fisticuffs!
Yeah! Apparently the Torquay mascot was challenging, like, a section of their stands, you know, to a brawl. So I wish I could have seen some video, but, yeah, so that's my daft shout-out for the week is to the Torquay mascot for taking on the fan base. Literally.
And what is he? What is the Torquay mascot?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think
you don't know what he was dressed up as?
No, because like I said, the article I read was fairly vague and generic, but I want to say he's like a lion or something.
A lion?
Or, I don't know, maybe I'm lying. Oh, get it?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, but yeah. Anyway, shout out. Torquay mascot for taking on the fan base, literally.
Fight Club.
Yeah.
Fight Club FC.
Or, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's like a Highlander thing. There can only be one mascot.
All right. My soiree in the daftness for you folks this week is Manchester United and their absolutely ridiculous sponsorships. Now, as we've talked about many times before, we talked about, you know, financial fair play and the ability these larger clubs have to bring in, you know, sponsors for everything. We were going over the list, Corey and I, before the podcast. You know, Man U has an official, you know, tire company. They have an official diesel engine. What else? They had an official personal care product company. But what really takes the cake is today they announced Manchester United now has a official Chinese wellness company, which is called IVC. So I guess if you're a Manchester United fan and you like your Chinese medicine, I guess you could get your, you know, your bear gallbladders and your tiger penis eye.
Yeah, tiger penis powder tea.
So it cures cancer. It's an aphrodisiac. It's like Cialis for Chinese people, I guess. I don't know. So, hey, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole daft episode just on that alone, because there's all sorts of joke products running through my head right now.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Okay, yep, we're back.
We had technical difficulties there. So please start your point over again.
Oh, I was just saying that we could do a whole podcast on fake daft products, because, you know, there's all sorts of jokes running through my head. So, yeah, I mean, in fact, we should maybe call Manchester United and ask them if we could be the official awful podcast of Manchester United.
Or I was thinking that maybe, given Robin Van Persie and his hair these days, maybe they should get the official man's hair dye.
Oh, there you go.
Do they have one of those?
If not, they should. I mean, obviously, I mean, Van Persie's got the gray creeping in like I do. He could, Just for Men Gray, the official hair color of Robin Van Persie and the Manchester United Red Devils.
I mean, he's making millions of dollars a year. He can't afford, you know, like a $20 box of hair dye.
Well, maybe he likes his gray.
Maybe he likes it. That's true. And, you know, if he does, that means he's very self-confident, as he should be, I guess, as a world-class footballer.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe he markets that too. The official confidence product of Manchester United.
Yeah.
To Van Persie.
So good for Manchester United, you know, finding all those loopholes. I mean, I forget. I remember this now. Somebody, I was reading something or hearing something to where, and I think it was Manchester United they're talking about, where they're trying to find the official everything they could find to loop around this financial fair play. So I'm surprised more clubs don't do this, to where they try to find, you know, an official whatever, you know, the official thumbtack. Oh, we're the official matches.
Well, yeah, because I just got it. This is what's going to give us some sponsorship for Man U. You ready? We start our own accounting and legal assistance firm, and we become the official loophole finder for Manchester United.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Smith and Chatelain, the official loophole finders of Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. Or how about the official belly button lint removal tool?
Oh, I like it. Yeah, yeah.
Get one of those too.
Yeah, because, you know, it's cool and damp in England. You know, you get a lot of sweaters. You get a lot of pilling from all those wool sweaters. I like it.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, red with a Man U logo on it.
Yeah, and then the hair and the lint that's removed from the belly button can then go into Wayne Rooney's toupees.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, see, I like this.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, come on. Oh,
Lord, we're having all kinds of difficulties today.
Yeah, Google, the official late laugh track of Manchester United. See, yeah. I'm going to be here all night. If you're going to, we got to end this segment, because I'm going to be here all night making bad jokes.
Yeah, now we're done. We won't drag this out for the sake of me, myself, and I, as well as our listeners.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, You know, coming up this weekend, I do believe there's more football, of course. We got League Cup, starts Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe even Thursday. There might be some games. I don't know.
Yeah, we're out. Woo!
Yeah, you're out. Rest. So there's no League Cup. And then is there Champions League the following week?
Yes.
And European football, yep.
Yep.
So there you go. So it's just busy. It's a busy time.
Yeah, because, again, the international breaks the following week after that.
Oh, my goodness. Boo. I'm over it. I don't need to see it.
Yeah, that was – yeah. I'm over it. I'm under it. I'm all of it.
So, all right. So we hope you enjoyed this bout of daftness. We do this for you, so we appreciate very much that you all listen. And again, always your feedback is always appreciated, both positive and negative. As I said, send that hate mail.
Yeah.
Send it in. We'll deal with it. We're grown men. We'll be okay. So, for Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and we will see you next week.
Okay, last one. Chivas USA, official folded MLS club of Manchester United. Okay.
Boom!
Yay! Hey-oh!